Hi, this is Chris Adams recording another Storage Unpacked podcast. This week, I'm here with Martin. How are you doing, Martin?
Hey, Chris, not so bad. For all our listeners, you might hear the odd bang and whistle. It's fireworks night when we're recording this in the UK.
Yeah, you're right. It's bonfire night. So yes, there's a few noises going around me, I think, as well. So this week, we are going to talk about QLC, which is a form of NAND technology. And to do that, we've got Steve Hanna from Micron. Hi, Steve.
Hey, how you doing, Chris? Great to be here.
Thanks for joining us. So our conversation is going to talk about QLC, which obviously is one of the newest versions of Flash that are out there. And Micron has a product that covers that area in the enterprise. So you seem like the perfect person to talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So why don't you start by just telling people who are listening what you do at Micron, and then we can go from there.
Okay. Yeah. Well, hello, everybody. I'm Steve Hanna, Senior Product Manager for Enterprise SSDs at Micron. I am leading the team that's released the world's first QLC SSD. And so it's the Micron 5210 Ion Enterprise SATA SSD. We first started shipping and selling the drive in May, and you probably saw that. And now we hit worldwide general availability for an expanded customer base, so anyone can get the product. And so just here to share some insights, what we have learned from the trenches, 100 plus customer meetings, just to give you the best possible sense of what is this technology, what does it mean for you, and how can you leverage this?
Let's start by talking about what QLC is, in case anybody doesn't really understand. Steve, why don't you just start there and give people a little bit of a background?
Yeah. Well, so what is QLC? So just at a high level, QLC stands for quad level cell. So effectively, the quad part is you're packing 4 bits of data into every cell. It's a little bit different than past generations. So the original NAND technology was SLC, or single level cell, 1 bit of data per cell. Then we came out with MLC, 2 bits per cell, then TLC, and now QLC. And so it's just this continued evolution of getting more fast capacity for less.
And if we look at it as a comparison, say, to the other products that are out there, as time's gone on, we're effectively getting diminishing returns because we're putting more bits into the same cell. But of course, we're not doubling the number of bits in the cells. We're actually just increasing the number.
Yes. Yep. That's correct. And that's what's interesting about this transition. It's different than before. Whereas, you know, when we went from SLC to MLC, we had a 100% increase in bit density, MLC to TLC, a 50% change. And then now we have a 33% change. So still very sizable and significant, but not on the same order of magnitude as before.
Now, I just wanted to talk about pricing, because I know that, Martin, you'd be very clued up on pricing from a storage perspective, really trying to understand how the price has changed with SLC down to QLC. And Martin, I was trying to think back to when I remember listening to Violin talking about stuff, you know, 10 years ago or whatever. And I'm sure they were talking about $20 a gig storage in their platform when they were selling it initially. Do you remember anything about pricing at all?
I was thinking about back then, $20 a gig seems a bit low.
You reckon?
Yeah, I would say if you were to look at Violin, and then also if you were to throw in our favourite company, the Evil Machine Company, what they were charging for Flash back in the day, I suspect it was more than that. It's probably 30, I would have thought.
Wow. Okay. So maybe the NAND itself, maybe the raw Flash was more like $20 a gig for SLC.
Yeah.
But I guess the point there is that one of the things we've definitely seen, Steve, as time's gone on, is from that ridiculously expensive level, prices have come down significantly. Now, I'm not asking you to tell us what you're selling your product for, but you know, if you are, that's great. But ultimately, the price reduction seems to have been significant year on year.
Yeah, I mean, well, over the past decade, I mean, gosh, from going what Martin was talking about, you know, $30 a gig in SLC days, 2007, you know, and then MLC, it certainly hit high single digits in terms of actual dollars. TLC finally dropping below the dollar mark. And now with QLC, we're really expecting to go out there around 20 cents a gigabyte. And so this is just a huge, huge reduction. I mean, over one hundredth? Is that the math?
I guess it must have been, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, exactly. So we're talking about going from, you know, so say it was $20 a gig for sake of argument. Did you just say 20 cents a gig?
Yeah, about 20. And it's going to vary, you know, about based 20. On the capacity that you purchase. But if you buy an 8 terabyte drive, yeah, you're looking at about 20, 21 cents a gig. I mean, just tremendously low. I mean, we've never seen that before.
No, that to me, I think, is an interesting point, Martin. The fact that we saw Flash initially starting off as a product that was very specifically targeted at tiers and stuff like that. But at that sort of price, it becomes very difficult to justify why you wouldn't choose that as your main platform.
Exactly. I think there's some very interesting things which could happen now. Certainly within arrays, if we've talked about in the past, when we start getting flashed out, so price agreement arrays, we take compression as a standard. So if we start compressing that as well, you're going to start seeing prices sub $100 per usable gig easily.
Yeah, which is incredible. Incredible. So Steve, just touching on the product itself.
Yeah.
We don't really get something for nothing here. So QLC, like TLC, like MLC, mm-hmm. has worse endurance than the previous generations, effectively.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's something we always expect, you know, with these transitions. And really, it's not something that our customers and a lot of folks, I think, really need to be worried about. And the reason for that is, you know, QLC, with our drive, we're speccing up to 0.8 drive writes per day. And when you look at these capacities, you know, 8 terabytes, you know, 4 terabytes, 8 terabytes, our lowest is 2 terabytes. So again, we're on interesting transition. The era of gigabyte class drives is kind of over with QLC. But when you take that, let's say, you know, 0.8 drive writes per day on an 8 terabyte drives, you're talking about being able to write 6 terabytes a day. I mean, that's a lot of data. And so that's why I don't think the customers, when they actually look at the specs, are really too worried about endurance for our target workloads. You know, is QLC the right fit for, you know, virtualized OLTP and journaling? Absolutely not. You know, that's right. Intensive workload. But QLC has always been targeted at read intensive profiles. But that band of what does read intensive mean? A much bigger band, I think, than we've discussed in the past. And also looking at what are people you doing today? What are the top trends today and tomorrow? AI, machine learning, deep learning, real-time analytics, virtual reality, you know, Ceph object stores, all of media streaming, all of those things, they're all read intensive. And so we look at, certainly QLC has a read intensive profile. The endurance levels actually match really these needs of the future.
Okay, so that's a really important fact that, yes, it is. It's very much a read-intensive product, but the demand is in the market from what you've seen when you've talked to customers.
Oh, big time, big time. So just some facts on that front. One of the things, and you and I have talked about this before, Chris, with endurance needs and actually looking at what have people bought. So it's interesting to look at all of those trends of AI and ML and DL and analytics and all those things. So huge, tremendous growth rates. So in those categories of things, I mean, we're seeing the minimum growth rate of about 9% up to 43%. So that's kind of the workloads itself, where people are investing and spending. Then you look at historically, just stepping back from the future and looking at the past and going, what have people actually purchased? That you and I have broke this down, Chris, that in 2016, net shipments, 61% of all enterprise SSDs sold worldwide, all interfaces, every country of the world, sold at less than or equal to 1 drive write per day. That was 2016. 61%. Then you go to 2017 and 75%. 3/4 of all enterprise SSDs purchased worldwide went out the door with less than or equal to 1 drive write per day. Now in 2018, that number is expected to jump to over 80% of all drives purchased being read intensive. And so we just put those pieces together and go, this is the future, is read intensive.
Okay, so for anybody who doesn't really understand the numbers, I'll just explain what you were describing there. So device or drive writes per day basically means how much data you can write to that device within its guarantee or within its warranty over a fixed period. So for instance, you just said there, Steve, 1 drive write per day. If the drive was a 2 terabyte drive, it means you can write 2 terabytes of data to that drive every day within its warranty period, which could be typically 5 years for sake of argument. So I think, Martin, the interesting thing there for me is when we first started talking about all flash systems and the start of all flash arrays and everything, there was very much a focus on needing to have the ability to write as much as you thought you were writing when you were writing on a traditional array. And I think people were very nervous about the flash would wear out within the warranty period. But that doesn't really seem to have borne out, does it?
It doesn't appear to have borne out at all. Everybody, there were all kinds of worries around flash at the time. Was, okay, so if you install all your flash drives at the same time, given all your write cycles are the same, they're all going to fail at the same time. So if you've got a RAID 5, you're going to lose everything in your RAID 5 rank on the same day or within the same week, which scared people. We're now seeing this isn't the case. We see endurances across the whole flash market, from consumer up to enterprise, that are staggeringly good. We've seen petabytes go through consumer Samsung drives. So yeah, I think that fear has gone away.
Yeah, and ultimately, what I think that means is that TLC, for example, was able to come into the market and be used in production enterprise arrays. So, Steve, I would say that this probably isn't going to be the same transition for QLC. We're not going to see QLC completely replace TLC. It's going to be more like the two will sort of coexist, I
think. Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what I'm seeing, too, is that, you know, you still have those more write-intensive workloads, kind of like I was mentioning top of the call about, you know, virtualized OLTP, journaling. There's a number of different very write-intensive ones. Certainly that we expect those to continue to be serviced by TLC. But for the vast majority of really these read-intensive needs, the vast majority of the market, we do expect QLC to help fulfilling some of those needs at a lower cost point.
Let's talk about the displacement of traditional hard drives then, because we've talked for years and years about the end of hard drives and the old flash data center. And I think every time we see another version of flash come along, we think that's going to be the thing that's going to do it for us. Now, where do we think that QLC is going to target, or how is it going to work against, say, 10K drives or 7K drives? Where do you see it fitting in that marketplace?
Yeah, that's a great question. This is like one of my favorite topics, you know, finally going head to head against hard drives. We can say it. This is it. I actually, you'll see we have even a marketing tagline for this product, you know, spin struggles. You don't have to. You know, the first SSD to challenge a hard drive is here. This is it. And is it the nail in the coffin in all hard drives? No, absolutely not. That's a much longer thing. But let's talk about, going back to your earlier point, Chris, about price. You know, where you were talking about, hey, how does this thing stack up in the market? Well, you look at what is cost per gigabyte of about 20, 21 cents. You know what? It's nearly identical to a 10K HDD. Now, why do we care about 10K HDDs? There's still about 20 million of those things going to be shipping in 2018. So this is still a sizable market. So the SSD inroads against hard drives, absolutely. Step one really begins against the 10K HDDs. And then also, you know, we talked about these target workloads of AI and machine learning and deep learning, and particularly for QLC, the data lakes, the 100 terabyte plus data sets that fuel those workloads, those have traditionally lived actually on 7200 RPM hard drives. We 100% expect those hard drives to transition over to QLC SSDs. And the main reason is because performance matters. Cost per gig certainly does matter, and that's why QLC is significant, coming as close to the hard drive as ever before. And just for the folks, you know, quick MSRP price comparison, a 7200 RPM hard drive typically at a list price level is about 4 cents a gig. You compare that to our about 20 cents, you have about a 5x price delta, but the performance differences are so staggering and the random read needs so staggering. You're able to get about 450 times more performance with the QLC SSD, and that's what makes it a no-brainer to get rid of the 7200 RPM. Get the most affordable SSD you can that's read-intensive, which matches those workload needs, and that's why QLC, I think, is going to go against the 7200s. Does that kind of help explain that piece, Chris? Because this is a big topic on...
I think it is a big topic, Steve. And one of the things I think we didn't really touch on there too much is the concept of TCO and the fact that if you think of putting drives into multi-chassis racks of equipment, it's going to be getting more and more difficult to justify that for hard drives now that capacities at least are on a par, if not easily exceeding the capacity of a hard drive today.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, from a TCO perspective, when you factor in power and you factor in cooling and you factor in the performance benefits, I mean, let's just talk power and cooling. You know, you look at a typical hard drive spec, about 8.6 watts or so versus a QLC SSD at about 2.8. I mean, you're really dealing with about a 3x delta in power usage, and you compound that across powering and cooling the thing 24/7, 365 days a year. That's huge. So what I'm seeing anyways from a TCO level, if you took an 8 terabyte 7200 RPM hard drive, compared it to an 8 terabyte QLC SSD, the Micron 5210, right there, we're within about 60-70%. And so you're really looking at what are you paying versus what are you getting for these huge performance benefits. And I think that's going to help people tip the scales.
I think the power, the space, the cooling, I think is going to be very important, certainly for, I'm thinking about the business I'm in. So I work for a broadcaster, we use CDNs, but I can see these devices actually displacing a lot of the CDN type appliances which are used, because if you want to drop something into a local pop, it was much easier to do it with a highly dense set of flash as opposed to some spinning disks. So I can see massive uses there.
And I imagine, Martin, that's pretty much read-only workload. It's 90% read, 10, you know, even less than that, probably 99%, I would have thought read.
pretty much. There's a certain amount of deletion as you refresh, but it's not a read. It's not a write intensive workload. Yeah. It's a read intensive workload.
On that point, Martin, I mean, we've just seen huge adoption in that space. Huge. I mean, we can confidently say a lot of the traffic on the internet already using things like 5210s and QLC to power it for the content delivery. I mean, it's just such a fit. I think we've seen just huge adoption already. That's an already statement. And because the workload is, I mean, the numbers I've typically seen, it's about 97% read, 3% write to a high end of 95.5. I mean, it's just so read intensive. You're getting a lot of use out of QLC for that.
Okay, let's just talk about workloads for a second, I think, Steve, because I remember when, and this is going back to probably Flash Memory Summer earlier in the year, you were talking a lot about workload mix and the sort of workloads that would suit this sort of technology well. And obviously that was very much talking about read intensive workloads. But I get the impression that your experience in the field is starting to say that you have to be a bit more discerning about thinking about how that's going to work, because this could be applicable to different types of workloads, not just a read-write ratio.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in terms of what we've been seeing, and this is actually people using the product, people actually using QLC, we've got customers using this all the way out to a 50-50 workload. And when I say that, I mean 50% reads, 50% writes. And that's typically fairly stunning from the sense that I think when most of us thought about QLC, I know just me, you know, going back to when I first took over this product, I was thinking read intensive, okay, maybe about 80% reads, 20% writes. But the fact that we've got customers all the way down to 50% reads, 50% writes, that says a lot about what you can do on this. And it also comes back to, it really belies another question. When I ask people about their workload, I ask them three things. First thing I ask is, what's your read to write ratio? That's obviously that first piece we were talking about. Second question I ask somebody is, what's your transfer size? The bigger your transfer size, the more sequential the data, of course, tends to be, the gentler it is on endurance. And then the third question is, you know, out of all the writes you do, what percent of those writes are sequential in nature versus random in nature? And if we have those three things, and you also know how much data do you actually write per day, man, you're gonna be able to instantly figure out if QLC is a fit for you.
Martin, on that particular subject, when I heard that, I thought, if you look back to where we used to be 15 years ago, we used to spend a lot of time thinking, let's get away from one tier of storage. Let's start thinking about putting in 10K drives instead of just 15K and creating tiers of storage within our storage arrays. And to do that, we ended up spending a lot of time counting spindles, counting IOPS, looking at how big you could build a RAID groups, wide striping to get performance. I get the feeling as QLC comes in, we're almost going back to that sort of understanding of the media again.
Oh, I think we will. I think we're going to end up with tiered flash. We've talked about it before. Everybody thought that flash was going to remove the tiers. That's simply not going to be the case. So we're going to end up with multi-tiers, as you know. You're going to end up with QLC, TLC, potentially storage class memory in those tiers as well. So yeah, I think tiering's not going anywhere. The HSM ILM problem is going to be here forever.
It's funny though, isn't it? Because I remember when we did start to talk about flash and people just said everything will be MLC, it'll be flat, it'll be an easy, simple hierarchy. And I remember thinking, no, it won't. Why would it be? Because products always end up with a variation of cost versus performance. So logically, as long as you can differentiate the cost significantly, and from what Steve's just been telling us, it looks like we can with QLC, you're always going to do that. It's going to be business as usual.
Yeah, data flow is going to be constant.
Building on this too, just to let you get, so what we're actually seeing at the customer level is exactly what we're talking about, where we're seeing QLC actually being used, and this is the exact customer words, as a performance capacity tier. Like somebody will be talking to me and they'll say, hey, Steve, do you got something that can give me a performance capacity tier? And I'm like, yeah, QLC, this is a great fit, because it's perfect for cool data, cool or warm data. There's so many times where we have something that's a little too cold that maybe we're accessing more often. Maybe if we're doing a Hadoop query, we're pulling 50% of our data set. We want as much of that to be accessible fast as possible. Good use case. Another use case, we've got a smaller subset of hot data that really more what may fall into that hot data actually can be fine in a cool or warm. And that's what we're seeing, where you put a TLC or an NVDIMM in your hot tier and then QLC for your cool or warm tier.
Okay, so we are going to see tiering come back and just be as prevalent within flash as it was within hard drives, which is great, you know, because I think that makes sense. It makes sense to be as efficient as possible, but it does sort of go against the grain of what people used to say, which is always fun. Now, I just want to ask one question, Steve, and that's really to put you on the spot and ask the question why Why SATA? Why a SATA drive and why not an NVMe drive at this point when the industry is theoretically heading towards NVMe? You know, you've obviously made a strategic decision on SATA, and I'm interested to understand what the logic of that is at this point.
No, I'm so glad you asked that, Chris. That's one of my favorite questions to actually field. You know, one of the things I said at FMS, we had a huge QLC session, was why wouldn't we do SATA? Because the question always comes in, hey, why aren't you doing NVMe? And I say, why wouldn't we do SATA? Let's look at the data here. So when we actually look at the market, 70%+ of all server sockets in existence are SATA compatible. So that makes SATA a great fit. Next thing we see is that if you look at enterprise storage, and we be holistic here, we look at enterprise storage of all types, what is sold? 76% of all enterprise storage sold is actually hard drives, you know? And so it's like, I look at those two facts and I look at the workload and I look at what are people doing with those hard drives? It's all the thing, the workloads we've been talking about. It's their SQL databases, their NoSQL databases. It's their media streaming and content delivery. It's their AI data lakes, machine learning, deep learning, where all those databases are stored, their Ceph objects, all this sort of stuff. And we look at that and go, SATA, all those workloads, read intensive. The customer is choosing a hard drive because it's the most affordable option. So there's an affordability play. There's also a capacity play where capacity matters for all these workloads. And performance does matter on a lot of those workloads. They're big data analytics, they're Hadoop clusters, huge deal on being able to access that data quick. And so when I put all those three together, it actually kind of makes it a no-brainer for SATA. And because that, you can take advantage of all of that stuff. Plus, it also delivers a lower cost profile, allowing us to hit these cost points you're seeing.
Yeah. And I think, Martin, last week podcast in the past, which I think was last week, we sat down and we chatted with Rick from the SCSI Trade Association. And one of the things I took away from that discussion was the scalability piece, where we could still talk about arrays having thousands of devices in them, whereas with NVMe, that doesn't seem to be as scalable yet. I don't know whether you felt that sort of thing as well when we had that discussion.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I also think that we're going to be in some interesting positions. If we look at where QLC SSDs are going to go in, obviously they're going to go in arrays, but we're also going to go into, whatever you want to call it, server SAN, server storage. We're going to see, QLC SSDs, SATA attached, and then you will also see NVMe drives in those servers as well, because yet again, we're going to see tiering. We can see tiering within the server, not just within the array. So there is a differential now. That's a definite move forward for us. So we're going to have to see developments in operating systems as well to tier.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think we sort of assumed that none of that was really going to be necessary going forward, but we're definitely going to have to do something about that ability to optimize at the operating system level. That's one we should park for another day, I think. Let's just go back to that workload discussion very quickly, Steve. And I just want to really go back and see if we really did it enough justice talking about that idea of different types of workload, because I think you're implying that if you've got a certain type of workload, you can sustain more writes than you could do in another scenario, or, you know, things like, say, for example, random 4K block writes compared to sequential writes. And I think that looks like that could be a deciding factor within the way you use QLC.
Absolutely. Yep. That's it. Dead on. And so in other words, you know, obviously your read to write ratio matters here. How many total writes are you doing, first of all? And when I talk about total writes, it's in how many gigabytes of data are you writing per day for a given workload? Because as you just noted, Chris, I mean, you look at these various transfer sizes and the sequentialization, you know, most of these target workloads that we're targeting tend to process data sequentially. And so what we actually do is we call it a best fit workload zone for QLC, which is, hey, if of all the writes you're doing, we don't even care what your read to write ratio is. It really comes down to what percent of your writes are sequential in nature versus random. And if over 70% of your writes are sequential in nature, you're going to be able to write over a terabyte of data per day for 5 years. And it's going to be a great workload fit for all of these workloads, you know, the AI, ML, DL data lakes, your real-time analytics, Ceph object stores, SQL, BI, business intelligence, NoSQL, Cassandra, MongoDB, all of those things, they fall or tend to be sequential and fall within that zone.
Okay. So Martin, I think that this is really interesting because it makes me think again that we have to get back to understanding our data profile even better than we used to. I think people might have fallen out of that as a skill, whereas going forward, we're going to have to be a bit more aware again.
Yeah, it's got some interesting conversations with our friends in development teams, understanding how they're going to write data and how they're going to use data.
It's going to ask some tough questions, isn't it? What is exactly the data profile of what you're writing? I need to understand the type of data profile, not just the amount. And I think it just shows you that you can't get away from some of those basics that we always used to do.
Yeah, they come back round again. We see big performance hits and everybody thinks it's never going to be a problem again. And now we see things like this and looking at how you invest properly. Obviously, if you really wanted to, you could apply everything onto the fastest level flash possible. That's obviously not a particularly wise scenario. So yeah, we're just going to have to get better at categorizing data again.
It depends how much money you've got, I guess. If you've got infinite amounts of money, we'd still be running on SLC, wouldn't we? But the world doesn't work like that.
Yeah, it's no magic money trees in the world of storage.
No, definitely not. So as we're sort of coming towards the end of our time, Steve, let's just talk about the future and where we see things going. So let's talk about, put you on the spot and talk about capacities, because somebody might look at it and go, well, I've got terabyte drives that look pretty similar to the TLC capacity drives that we had previously. So why are we not starting with a 32 terabyte QLC drive? You know, what's the rationale behind that and where can we see it going?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So your question, why are we not starting with 32 terabytes? The long and the short of it is the market's not ready yet. And the reason I say that is, you know, we've had 8 terabyte drives on the market for actually a number of years now. I think it was 2016 was the first 8 terabyte came out. That was our SATA 5100 product. But you look at that and 8 terabyte, we're still at a much lower capacity in terms of SSDs. So what you are seeing happen strategically here with QLC, the average capacity sold today between 1 and 2 terabytes, it's actually somewhere around 1.5 terabytes. That's the average enterprise SSD capacity for SATA. And then what you did, what you saw with our 5210 QLC SSD is that our starting capacity, and this is the real signal, and this is the part to look at, is 2 terabytes. So effectively what we are signaling is the old days of measuring SSDs in gigabytes, those are over. QLC, minimum 2 terabytes. So what we're doing is we are flat out raising the floor rather than necessarily say raising the ceiling, which might be starting with 32 terabytes, something that maybe a very, very minority of folks would purchase. What we're going to do is actually raise the bar and raise the floor and pull all of the capacities up and then begin at that platform with capacity certainly growing to the levels you noted and beyond into the future.
Okay. I mean, Martin and I have talked about this, haven't we, Martin, about the idea of having 100 terabytes in a single drive and the risk factors that are associated with that. I think it's going to take a little bit of time for people to get comfortable with that, don't you think, Martin?
Yeah, the failure domain is going to be huge for some people. But we're seeing this with tape, we're seeing it with disk, it's traditional disk as well. So I think we'd have to get used to what failure domains look like. From 100 terabytes of storage is, for some people, is an awful lot. And for other people, it's nothing.
Yeah.
So it depends. It depends where. Would you want to have all your data stored on a 100 terabyte drive? Not if you've only got 100 terabytes of data. If you've got many, many petabytes worth and you're looking at different data protection techniques, yeah, a 100 terabyte drive may make a lot of sense for you.
Yeah, great. So we'll expect to see that 64 terabyte drive next year then, Steve.
I love it. You know, Nimbus already, they've already got their 100 terabyte Exa drive actually on the market.
They have, but it's like a brick. It's like 2.5 inch, isn't it? Yeah, so it's not it's not in the nice smooth 2.5 inch form factor, unfortunately.
Yeah, you lift a 5210, it's about I don't even know, it feels like air.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, wonderful. So that was a great conversation. Where can people come to you and find out a bit more? What's the best website link? What about you on social media? Can people stalk you if they want to? Or is there a Micron Twitter handle we should be following?
Yeah, absolutely. No, thanks, Chris. In terms of URLs and websites, start there. Two great sources. Number one, I'd refer people to micron.com/5210. Specifically, what you're going to find there is all of the 5210 product specs and information. And that is going to really give, you're going to see that we note these workload-specific endurance ratings. It's for the first time ever in the industry. It's right there. So I would encourage people to take a look at that. You can also go to micron.com/QLC. The reason I note that is every single one of these workloads we've been talking about, we've got workload research and white papers on all of this stuff, on actual real-world use cases. And so you can see some test configurations and results on those things I've been talking about. And then the final thing, absolutely, feel free to reach out to me personally, Stephen J. Hanna, or linkedin.com/StephenJHanna, and you should be able to find me.
So Steve, when do we expect to see this technology trickled into consumer drives?
So it's already done. We actually already got some, our consumer QLC drive. We launched it on the market a couple weeks ago. It's the Crucial P1. That one is an NVMe drive. And effectively, the QLC value add you're seeing there is delivering these huge capacities. You know, I think the minimum, again, same strategy, raise the bar, raise the minimum. Minimum's 500 gigs, and you're able to get an NVMe drive and performance at about the price of a SATA consumer drive.
Cool.
Okay, thanks for joining us, Steve. It was a great conversation. Look forward to catching up with you soon. For everybody who's listening, as usual, you can find us at storageandpack.com, where we'll put all of those links and pieces of information Steve just gave us. You can find us at Storage and Pack on Twitter, and of course, you can find us on LinkedIn. So once again, Steve, thanks very much for joining us, and catch up soon.